Hello everyone, welcome to another, awesome episode, interesting episode, memorable episode, memorable episode of
Rewatch.
Yeah, it took a while. You could see my brain jumping from topic to topic and seeing like which one fits, because of course I didn't think about that before. But you know what we're doing? We're rewatching retro TV shows. That's why it's called Retro Rewatch. And if I say we, I of course mean Jeff Gamet, who's with me and who has not seen the shows we're watching, and me, Patrice. So, hi Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing really great because we're here together.
Yes, it's always good when we're together. Yeah, and we're going to watch, we actually did watch an episode already. We're going to talk together about one. As always, like we're doing Stargate SG-1, a show that I love and I'm so looking forward to going through with you. There's so many really cool episodes still coming up. And yeah, you haven't watched this one before. So which episode did we watch today, Jeff?
Today we watched Joe Lunar's Memories. And I wanted to point out that I remembered what we were watching.
Wow, that is a surprise. Season 3.
Right?
Season 3, episode 12. That's the one.
So we're about halfway through the season.
Yeah, pretty much. 22 episodes this season again. So we're basically past the halfway point. Didn't get a mid-season cliffhanger this time. There was no mid-season break so far. So maybe that's still coming
up. Well, that's because
they
were busy just writing meh episodes. And that takes a lot of effort, you know? Yeah, how do we take this show that's been firing on all chevrons and let's just go ahead and make it less good for a few episodes? I bet that took a lot of effort.
I think so. Yeah, that was hard. They were like, oh my god, we have to save money and we have to make 22 episodes and we have some cool stuff planned. So how do we do that?
Yeah, you know, I have a hypothesis.
Uh-huh.
They realized that they had been setting the bar higher and higher.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, it's like, where will we go from here? We need to pull the bar back down so we have some room where we can work.
Okay. I don't think that much thought went into it. I think it was just in the rush of production, you have to do that. To be fair, we would not recognize the really, really, really good ones, probably, if there weren't some bad ones to compare them with.
That's fair.
So, should we just dive in production notes stuff?
Sure. So I always love the special production notes behind the scenes stuff that, mm-hmm. that you find.
Yeah. So I just mentioned it. Like we didn't have a mid-season cliffhanger so far. This episode aired October 22nd, 1999. That's probably why there is no mid-season break, because they went straight into fall. Like, we started in, was it July, I think? And we're going straight into fall. So, yeah. October 18th, 2000 in Germany, if you want to know. So, that's probably right about the time when I watched it. I mean, I was in school still, so I had time.
So had I been watching this when it was originally on,
mm-hmm.
we would have been watching it in different centuries.
That is true, yeah. That is literally true, because I would have watched it dubbed in German still, because, it was next to impossible to get anything in English.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not impossible, but pretty hard. Like, I probably would have needed to wait for the DVDs to come out. I think it was DVDs already at that point, so.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there was VHS before that, and you could get sometimes the VHS in, like, region, what was it, region 2? No, region 1? I always forget which one is which. Region blocking, this whole BS.
Yeah, region 0 meant worldwide. Region 1 was United States. Region 2 was...
It's probably Europe then. So it was
I think so.
So then it would have been a region 1 locked, or actually, I mean, with VHS even, you have the whole, what was it called? NTSC versus PAL?
Versus PAL, yeah.
Yes, PAL. Like, that whole thing would have been a problem. So, yeah, wow. Going back. And the kids that are listening to this right now, and I say kids, like, they're like, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah, there's two camps here. This is a very binary thing. Yes. Either, oh my God, I remember that, what a pain, or I have no idea what words are coming out of Patrice's mouth.
Probably, yes. Okay, let's go back to words that people hopefully will understand. I don't know, we went off on a tangent already. IMDb rating, 7.9. We're going up. We're closing in on the 8.0 already. So from 6, I think a couple episodes ago, 6.8, 6.9, something like that. We're at least at 7.9 out of 10 now. So that's nice. It's going up. Yeah. The quality is going up. You can tell. This episode was written by two complete newcomers to Stargate. It's the only episode they ever wrote, or at least both of them wrote. Sonny Wareham and Daniel Stashower were credited for this one. So, yay for them. Good job.
Good for them.
Nice episodes. Directed by Peter DeLuise. I think we know him. I was trying to see if I can spot him. I think I saw him, but it was blurry in the background, so I'm not 100% sure. There's no official... I tried to find it. There's no official record of where he showed up. It wasn't obvious, at least.
I'm assuming he's in the group of prisoners when SG-1 first comes in.
I saw him as one of the prisoners, or one of the Jaffa, I think I saw. I was like, oh, that looks kind of like him. Yeah, but hard it's, to
I mean, I wasn't looking closely.
Mm-hmm. I so tried to.
Totally just assuming.
I really tried to see if he was anywhere, but I said it was so blurry. It was somewhat blurry, and I was like, it looks like him, but like in costume and whatever. I'm like, not 100% sure.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of guest stars, of course. I think the first one you will be very happy about.
Because I bet you're right.
Carmen Argenciano is back as Jacob Carter and or Selmac. Doesn't say too much this episode. Other than grunting a little bit.
and a couple... key plot bombs that he drops, yes, but
that's true.
Yeah, he doesn't do hardly anything in this episode. Yeah.
I have this time. I thought I would look up what else he's known for, and he appeared in films like The Godfather Part 2 and Identity. Also, quite a spread, 1974 to 2003. But yes,
I'm assuming he's done other stuff in between.
Oh yeah, yeah, and after a little bit. We have, of course... But
yeah, Godfather. I can totally see him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he fits in.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, I think, with his ancestry. We have J.R. Bourne as Mortouf or Lantash, of course. Recurring roles on Teen Wolf and 100 is part of his credit.
I haven't seen either of those series.
I have seen the 100, so I did not remember him at all, but okay. We have William DeVries as Alwyn. Known for soap opera work in General Hospital and The Young and the Restless.
So which one is Aldwyn?
No clue.
Okay. I feel better about not recognizing.
Yeah. Just get the credit. Same for Bob Dawson. That one you should recognize. Bynar.
Yeah, they... Bynar's mentioned by name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the episode.
Character actor, maybe as author, who knows. Disturbing Behavior and Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. Dion Johnston as Neonak. Interesting that because we know who actually then turns out to be him, but I guess behind the mask, they used a different actor. So, interesting.
It's... Okay, I hadn't thought about that, but now I now have a hypothesis. Neonak seems much taller until the reveal.
Yes, yeah. He also played Captain Nelson in Rules of Engagement early in the season, if you want to know that.
Oh, okay. Well, he gets around.
then I think we know Peter Williams pretty well, back as Apophis in a surprise. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in a second. He gets credit for Soul Survivor, Soul with OU, of course, and Police Academy, the series.
Huh. It's, you know, how about if I call out, which I think I've already mm-hmm. done, he's in one episode of The Expanse.
He is. I mean, you see, we talked about Eureka, like, and how many actors from other shows we know that show up there. So,
mm-hmm.
David Palfy as Sokar also played Dracula in Blade, the series, and appeared in House of the Dead. So, Sokar.
Okay.
Peter Kent as Kintec, I think that one we do remember, is actually known as Arnold Schwarzenegger's longtime stunt double. So he was in Terminator 2 and in Total Recall.
Oh, okay.
We have Daniel Bacon as a technician, a regular background actor. We see him all the time. We see them very much in the beginning, I think. We have Eli Gabby as Jumar, voice actor.
Okay.
And we have, remember, we got the little, the scene with young Rosha / Jolinar. That is Tanya Reid.
I am so glad that they had a different actor to play mm-hmm. Jolinar.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, that little scene. She actually appeared as Jolinar already in The Line of Duty, of course. We've seen her before. And finally, Christine Kennedy as young Samantha Carter. She is a child actor with a lot of TV credits.
Okay.
So, there's that. German title. Jolinar's Erinnerungen. Wow, German is hard today. Jolinar's Erinnerungen, Jolinar's memories.
Patrice, I want to point out German's hard every day.
That's true. Tell me about it. I struggle with it every day, and I was born here. The funny thing about this episode is it was actually intended as a single episode. But the production... Huh. Was so expensive that it was split into two parts to spread the cost. They were like, okay, we have to do 2 for 1 because otherwise we can't afford this. The second part, The Devil You Know, was written afterward.
So, okay, so they shot the whole thing.
They started, yeah, and, apparently.
Okay, and then they were so like, they got started and
they were like, shit, this is too expensive. So we need to do 2 episodes out of 1, basically. So they had some rewrites or some add-ons to kind of make it worth 2 episodes. Because the story was, of course, 1. But, yeah, that's how they made it work.
Okay. Well, I have a feeling that this wouldn't have worked as well as a single...
I think so too. But I mean, to be fair, they did expand the story. So it's not that they tacked on a second episode, kind of.
They just fleshed it out even more.
Exactly. They were like, okay, let's make this 2 episodes and then we can tell more bigger stories. This two-parter was almost as expensive to produce as the pilot episode, Children of the Gods.
Wow.
So, and if you know anything about pilots, they're usually a little bit more expensive because you're like, you have nothing, right? So you have to kind of make it work.
Right. And yeah, and they had a lot of people in the pilot. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Peter Williams was only credited at the end to keep his surprise return a secret from viewers, of course. That worked out really well. We'll talk about that mm-hmm. later. The episode was visually inspired by Dante's Inferno and traditional depictions of the underworld. I think not a surprise if you saw it.
No surprise at all.
The Nito's surface and the prison were shot at Abridged Studios with extensive colored gels, smoke, and visual effects to create the volcanic atmosphere. Okay. So, of course, they didn't. I think that they had a hard time going outside in BC and finding anything that looks like it. They probably would have needed to go to, I don't know, Arizona or New Mexico. No, I'm kidding, of course.
I mean, the only place that we know of that they've shot previously that mm-hmm. they could have potentially made work is that it's near the beach somewhere, that kind of sandy area.
Yeah, but even that, it's too much sand.
But they still would have had to put, like, gels. And...
Yeah, it's too much sand. It's not, yeah, it's not true. Too much enough. Sand. That's why I said Arizona. Yeah. Like, you could go to Grand Canyon, and maybe that looks hellish enough. It's hot. I don't know. Kidding, of course.
You know, Arizona in the summer is pretty hellish.
it's unfortunate, yes. The cargo ship miniatures we saw were, of course, reused from other Stargate 1 episodes, especially one recently where we saw the first time.
The turtle ship.
And, of course, redressed for the approach this time. So, but yeah, yay. Miniatures that pay off.
Yeah.
So, I have more little things for later. Not too much, but a couple things. But let's just jump in.
Yes, and I have a question about sure. something that I may be misremembering from okay. the very first seconds of the episode.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, so what do you think you misremembered?
So the episode starts with the Stargate
mm-hmm.
kawooshing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get everyone talking about unscheduled activation it's
maybe the code. It's that it's code for the Tok'ra, maybe it's that.
Right, and then they say open the iris,
yeah,
and they open the iris. You can't have a kawoosh through a closed iris.
I don't so know how did it I works.
Am I remembering the kawoosh actually happened?
I don't know, but I would assume yes. I mean, you could have the kawoosh and then the iris closes, right? It closes pretty quickly.
So, okay, so maybe it's like on an auto thing.
Yeah.
Unscheduled kawoosh, boom, it closes.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. We've had this topic where it's like sometimes you hear the activation and then they show and they're still dialing or vice versa. Like the stuff is always misaligned when they're doing Stargate stuff, at least so far. So I wouldn't be surprised if like sometimes they get a signal before the gate has even connected, like stuff like that has happened in the past.
That's true. It's, Stargate physics, it's all fast and loose.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah, so as you said, we get, maybe it's dead from, I think Jack says it to Carter. But, oh no, it's not.
Okay, yep.
it's no. only the weird guy, it's Martouf. I don't like him very much. I think he's kind of strange.
It's, I have a problem with his haircut.
Me too.
It's
he Vulcan?
Holy forking shirt balls. He could be
Vulcan. But he does not have as nice a haircut as Anson Mount as a Vulcan. Just saying.
No. Yeah, that episode of Strange New Worlds,
yeah.
4.5 Vulcans,
oh, yeah.
that took the term Pike's Peak to a whole new level.
Oh, yes. It's probably the best Star Trek I've ever seen. It was hilarious.
Yeah, and out of context, me saying, Patrice, I've actually climbed Pike's Peak, could be interpreted in so many ways.
Yes. So, back to our Vulcan, Martouf. Even the name sounds vaguely Vulcan. I don't know. Huh, interesting.
Huh, yeah.
Maybe he's Vulcan and we just don't know. I mean, maybe the ears fell off or were surgically altered so that he fits in with the other Goa'uld.
Could be.
Yeah, he's a little bit too smiley for Vulcans, though. So.
Yeah, but have you met Doug?
Ah, that's true. Yeah, we've met Doug. So something is wrong, and we hear from Martouf that Sam's dad has been captured by the devil, by Sokar. And Matruf says, you must understand when I say that if Zolmak is still alive, he has been sent to hell. Yes. A place of eternal suffering and damnation from which there is no return. And that's it. That's the opener. I timed it. It took 90 seconds.
Wow.
That was
fast. It took us longer to discuss the opener than it did to actually watch
to discuss Vulcan Hair than it did to watch it. Yes, it's true. I mean, to be fair, it usually takes us longer to discuss the episode than it actually takes. So,
yeah, I blame me. If I could stay on topic, it would be much faster.
Yeah.
If I could keep the episode in chronological order, it would be much faster too.
Not that much. So what did you think about the opener?
It was fine. It gave me the information for the setup for what the episode's going to be about.
Yeah.
But
it's also kind of predictable, right? You're like, okay, they're going to go to hell and something's going to happen.
Yeah. And it's a Let's Rescue Zolmak episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I don't think they even hit that part. They're like, okay, that's kind of obvious. Okay.
Yeah. So, they gave us a setup for what we're going to see through the rest of the episode. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine.
Until the end when we get a surprise.
Until the end when we get a surprise. That is true. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So we come back. We're in the hallway and we get ye old walk and talk. I really like that they started introducing that. A lot of other shows have done that, but in the beginning, Stargate didn't. They would always go to the exposition room and sit down and talk. But they, I think this season or maybe late last season, they started introducing the walk and talk, whether walking
the
somewhere. The exposition hall or staircase sometimes. They sometimes go the spiral staircase and talk, so. Yeah, it makes it a little bit more dynamic. Right.
More walk and talk happening.
Yeah. And Matruf says, I'm sorry, Samantha. I know this must be difficult. Once captured, Zolmak and Jacob, your father, would have been brutally tortured. But Sokar would rather see his victims suffer than die. So at least he's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then they talk briefly about, rescue mission. But no one has ever escaped. Except for Jolimar.
Right.
And you know what? If they had done this, if they had ended the opener here, it would have been way more interesting.
I agree.
We get a little bit background and then we get Jolimar has escaped.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That would have made a much more compelling intro.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't. Maybe it was too long or maybe they just didn't think about it.
I don't know. Maybe they thought Zolmak and Jacob are trapped in hell.
It's enough.
Was enough of a hook.
Yeah. I mean, we did watch it.
Maybe, so. maybe in 1999 it was enough of a hook. Oh, but come 2000.
2000 Germany, we're like,
Yeah.
So now, where we go now. Finally,
it's time to go get some exposition action going on.
Yes, exactly. The exposition room. So basically they talk about the planet Neetu and Daniel says, yeah, of course, that totally makes sense. A ghoul that impersonates the devil would, of course, create a place like Neetu. And then he's like, oh, Neetu is from the book of Amtot, something like that. Which is kind of a how-to guide on passage through the ancient Egyptian and the other world regions. And many of those regions were described as dark places with pits of fire, home to hellish monsters and the damned. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Daniel Wiki.
Yeah. We learned that Jolinar never told anybody how she escaped. Matuf kind of tried to, but she was very cagey about it. She never
Think that would be useful intel for the Tok'ra.
Yeah, but they had a relationship, so maybe he wanted to get the booty and he was like, okay, I'll not push it, otherwise I'll sleep on the sand dune for the next 3 years or something.
Right. Yeah.
Something like that, at least. So Martouf wants to use the recall device that we've seen in the past being used on Stargate personnel.
Right.
Maybe hunt down some of their memories.
Yeah. Jack.
Jack is like, oh, I want to go in with a few more units. He calls them units.
Mm-hmm.
He means, of course, Stargate units, but I'm like, what kind of units does he want? But I think Martouf shuts it down. He's like, yeah, that place is heavily fortified, and like, no matter how many people we send in, I don't think you would get anywhere.
Yeah, Martouf's plan is stealth.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
extraction.
Tok'ra are always stealthy. Like, they would never do a frontal assault anywhere. Compared to Stargate Command. So, Martouf says, Sonlak's recovery is obviously a high priority. However, and forgive me, Samantha, there's something larger at stake here. The Tok'ra believe that Sokar is about to launch a massive attack against the System Lords. Which is, of course, bad news. Because here we get Tilgwiki again. Because he says, the chaotic and feudal disorganization of the System Lords' fragmented rule is a far more vulnerable target than that of one powerful Goa'uld. Thank you for stating the obvious.
Well, you know, if they didn't do that, really, what else would there be for Christopher Judge to do in this episode?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, he gets to fly a ship later.
He gets to sit in a chair on a set later.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. He doesn't say much. So all of that means that the fate of the galaxy may be very literally at stake. Because, I mean, we can imagine, like, if the Goa'uld are not in fighting with each other, if there's basically only one, he might turn outward and see, like, oh, those pesky humans, they're really annoying. Maybe we should destroy them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is, as they say, a clear and present danger.
Yes.
Well, they don't say that here, but
no, US they military kind of, thing. They kind of say that, which is why they also imply it. Hammond at the end agrees. He's like, yeah, okay. But
I like Jack's take on this.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack is funny. He says, well, I'm going to end up there in hell sooner or later. Might as well check out the neighborhood, huh? Yeah. Typical Jack. He's like, but it's interesting that he thinks he's gonna end up in hell. Like, it makes you wonder. Like, you would think he's a good guy and he's gonna go to heaven. I mean, if you believe in all of that, what did he do that he would go to hell?
It's, well, you know, we know his past is as a soldier includes special operations.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen one of those operations that went horribly wrong played out true. Over and over and over that in the holodeck.
True. So you mean, but was that his fault? I mean, he thinks he thinks so, probably.
He thinks so, but if you extrapolate out from that, he's been involved in other operations where he's had to kill people just simply to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that that's kind of what they're going at.
Yeah.
He knows he's done some very bad things.
Yeah, apparently. So it's interesting, like that he himself thinks so. So they're going to another planet. There is they're in the control room, about to dial out, and Martouf says, "Oh, the ship is waiting on Borash because there's no gate on Nitu."
I just had a horribly morbid thought.
Okay,
what if Jack is offhandedly saying, "I'm going to be there, so might as well check out the neighborhood," because he feels it's his punishment for not being able to save his son's life. I know that's not what they're really going at in this episode. Or I'm assuming not. Like, maybe, honestly, I think they're just going for a funny line.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course. No, but I mean, yeah, maybe that is the thing that he blames himself for, and why he thinks he will go to hell, because, I mean, it kind of was his fault.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, he does bear some responsibility.
Yeah. So maybe that's why. Like, I think you might not be all that wrong. Yeah. Anyway, we go to Borash. There's a ship.
And I shout out loud, turtle ship!
Turtle ship! But it's a little bit older. It's the same, it is supposedly the same one Jolinar was found on. It's a bit of a beat up, like, doesn't even have cloaking device, kind of bare. Like, I think they mentioned it's like, oh, it can only do 40% life speed.
Or 30%, yeah, because 40% the engines are damaged.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. So it's kind of barely working, basically. And they talk about, like, okay, what's the plan? And Martouf revealed more stuff, which Jake is not very happy about, because he does not like surprises, and he mentions that very specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tilk will have to stay back and pilot the ship, while the other four take escape pods down, because that is how you go down to the planet.
Which moon? I suppose makes sense. It's supposed to be a one-way trip.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, one-way trip to hell, right?
Right. And why would you need to use the resources to have a place for a ship to land that could potentially be taken over?
Yeah. Just why didn't they just rain down or something? But yeah, okay, they don't want... Yeah, that's true. They don't want
that's people a good to escape question. From why there. Didn't they just ring down?
Yeah, but they don't want people to know there's rings and that they can escape from that, right? So maybe... That's why. Anyway, Martouf asks, shall we embark? And Jack says, by all means, to hell with us.
Jack.
Yeah. So they fly through hyperspace, which is a cool effect. I don't remember. Have we seen this before? Oh, yeah, we did in season one when they were flying towards Earth.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I remember that. So it's nice.
It was familiar, mm-hmm. so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, since we have time, you know what would be good. We have a mobile exposition room, so let's use that.
I thought it was the exposition cargo hold.
Yes, it was. I think every ship has a space like that.
Well, it has to. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to... I almost said to expose, but, you know, to have these dialogues
mm-hmm.
for us.
Yeah. So Matruf says the moon was once an industrialized colony of the planet Delmac. And then when Sukar conquered Delmac and made it his homeworld, he transformed the moon's environment to suit the myths. He filled the atmosphere with barely breathable toxins, then blasted numerous holes in the moon's surface, releasing the molten core. Great guy, I have to say, this Sukar. Awesome.
Yeah. Love what you've done with the place. Real fixer-upper. Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's time to use the memory device. Did you recognize the little thing that he was using to activate it? Him being Matouf.
What he had in his hand?
Mm-hmm. The activation thingy for the memory device chips.
Well... I saw it, but now I feel lame because I didn't pick up on what I needed to pick up on.
Okay, we've seen this before in the season, the end of the cliffhanger of last season, when they had the flashback episodes and they had these memory devices. It is actually a electric nose hair trimmer.
Oh, it's the same prop.
It is the same prop.
But oh my still, God.
When you see it and you're like, yeah, that looks like an electric nose hair trimmer. It actually does look like it.
I had forgotten about that. Mm-hmm. And I recognized it when he's using it. And and it seemed like a silly prop. And
yeah. Next time you see it, I get it, you know why.
Yeah.
Carter sees young Sam making cookies, and her dad comes home, and turns out that was the a very bad memory because it's the day her mom died.
Yeah.
That also explains where her mom is. I mean, how we know.
Now, yeah. I don't think we've had any mention of her mom up until this point.
At least I don't remember any. Like, we talked about her brother and her dad and all of that, what's going on, but never about her mom. So that was, yeah, not a good memory. So Martouf is like, yeah, think about Jolinar. So she sees young Jolinar and Martouf the night before she left to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed up all night together.
All right. You know, if the turtle ship is rocking, don't bother knocking.
Exactly. And that's kind of it. There's not too much more. They go to bed, basically, in the ship. It's kind of boring, so they're like, okay, let's go sleeping. Sam wakes up a little bit later and gets up and walks over to Martouf. Did you notice that he was actually sleeping with the memory calibration nose hair trimmer device?
Yes. Yes, it was in his hand.
And I'm like, okay, that is weird. Why is he sleeping with it?
Yeah,
I mean, we know why, because he needs it. We know he needs it in this scene, so he has it in his hand already.
Right, but still.
It made no sense, but okay. Maybe it's his favorite toy. I mean, who knows? It vibrates, so.
Maybe it's not just a nose hair trimmer.
Yeah, so she wants to try again, she tells Martouf. And Martouf says, I would just like you to know, it has always been my belief that Jolinar kept her experience on Nitu a secret because she believed it might come between us. I don't want you to hold anything back for the same reason you don't have to protect me. Very human moment, right? Ish.
Yeah.
For Tok'ra. Like, people do that sometimes, where, like, they have a bad experience, but they don't want to burden the other person, or they had to do something and don't want the others to know, because they're ashamed of what they had to do. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and, the next memory is not so fun.
No. Get Sam to yell, make it stop.
Yes, because she remembers very vividly, she feels it, the torture that Jolinar had to endure while on Nitu. She also remembers some Gold's bedroom. So, hint, hint.
Yeah. Yeah, how about that?
So Jack has a word with Martouf. Like, I think she wakes everybody up because he's screaming and he turns it down. So Jack has a word with Martouf because he thinks he is pushing her too hard. So Jack is being protective of Carter, of course, makes sense.
Of course.
Given what we know about them. I mean, one, what we know about Jack as a leader, but also what we know about their relationship.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's going to be protective of her on more than just a professional level.
But Martouf says, if she does not remember Jolinar's method of escape, I will not allow any of you to accompany me down to the surface. That's what she says. But Jack just shuts that down. He's like, uh-uh. I know. I heard you. And forgive the bravado, but it's been done before. It can be done again.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Jack has a point.
He does. In the meantime, Daniel and Carter are talking as well. And Carter kind of confides in him. She's like, it's so confusing. Images and faces and fragments of thoughts and feelings. There was a Gold on Nitu, not so Carr. He was, let's just say he was less attractive. Less than attractive, she says.
Less than attractive, yeah.
I know his name. I can't find it, but I get this horrible, sick feeling when I remember him. Then he says something happened between him and Jolinar. And Carter says something worse than torture and pain. Something Jolinar never wanted Martouf to find out about. That is a very familiar story.
Yeah.
It's like tons of women had to go through that, like do something they didn't want to do, that they didn't, they wanted to forget, to survive. Yeah. And turns out, I mean, when you go to hell as a woman.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, she was attractive, so, and he's not. But he's a girl, so.
So, yeah.
He just takes.
when this whole conversation happened, it had a lot of weight for me.
It is.
Not just because of everything that they just implied right here.
Yeah.
But also because they played this scene in 1999. And this is a scene that I can see probably ended up having a lot of discussion about how far can we take this with the discussion. And because
that's true.
There's, I think for network television.
For 1999 network television?
Yeah, this would have been a really touchy subject.
Yeah, I mean, I think even today it would be. I think in general it's a touchy subject, but it's also good that they did not shy away from it. But they also didn't make it like, I don't want to call it a thing, but like kind of, you know, use it for the sensational aspects of it. Kind of like that.
I like that. They didn't sensationalize it. I like that.
Yeah. It's like, it was very, very tactfully done without revealing too much, but also being very clear of what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very obvious what she had to do.
Yeah. So, you know what we have to do now? Arrive at the planet and go down.
Oh, that's right, because we've talked the crap out of the whole thing. There's no exposition left. No. It's time for something to happen so we can talk about it.
So Matuf reattaches the memory disk behind Sam's ear and turns it on a medium setting, basically being like, yeah, we have to hide it. Like, we can, that this can't be obvious because otherwise someone will use it. Jack wants to bring a weapon. Matuf says no, and Jack says, I don't care. I'm bringing a weapon. And they do bring a communication device they think will work from the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go into the, I call them sarcophagi.
I call them the Aquaman bulbs. The
Aquaman bulbs.
Because the shape,
they
have that repeating chevron shape down the front, which looks to me exactly like the A of Aquaman's belt.
Funny, okay. Yeah, anyway, the escape pods, they go in. And we get some really dramatic music as they're going down to the planet. It, that descent sequence is actually a combination of practical models with the ship, with some, and I think, very obvious digital volcano and cloud effects. I think it was very obvious they were fake. At least for me, it was.
It was very obvious. That said, I liked the whole descent sequence. I thought it was done really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was obvious. It's not real, but that's okay. I thought it was done really well.
We're in sci-fi. Like, okay, fine. Like, I'll suspend my disbelief anyway a little bit, quite a lot actually.
Right, but you know they did stuff that made it believable.
Like,
here's these pods coming in the atmosphere, and we see the atmosphere burning and ionizing around the pods as they descend. And,
all of that. So they make it to the surface. There's a brief sequence of Marco Polo, basically.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, Jack, I like his line about how hot it is.
Yeah, he's like, well, at least it's a dry heat.
Yeah.
He's right. So let's go underground. We've seen enough from the surface from that set. So let's go to the pits. And you can hear screaming, which I found. Like, the sound effects were really well done.
I really felt like they were trying to project the idea of Dante's Inferno on us, which of course they were.
Yeah.
But you could feel it.
Yeah. And Carter finally remembers that Jolimar met the unattractive Gold, and his name is Bynar. So they scream at they want to see Bynar. But there's a guy in a mask and tall guy, right? We remember that?
Right.
Naonak, who says, no.
No.
At which point I think Jack pulled his gun. She was like, what is he thinking?
Yeah, well, the crowd is kind of coming in on him. And yeah. So he just pulls his gun.
Yeah, I'm like, still, what is he thinking? Like, that's not going to end well for him. So Bynar whammies Jack with... So he comes out and whammies Jack with his hand device. And they all get captured. So did it work? Did it not work? I don't think that was the plan.
I don't think the plan is working.
I don't know if they had a plan.
I assumed the plan that they mm-hmm. didn't bother to show us in the exposition turtle was that they'd get down there, they'd infiltrate the group of mm-hmm. prisoners and try and find where Selmak is.
Yeah.
And then get him go out get there. Him.
Yeah.
And leave then call again. Teal'c.
Yeah. Get out of there somehow and figure out how to leave because they haven't figured that out yet. So he Bynar asks who asked for him, and Carter reveals that she's like, "I do. I am Samantha Carter, host of Jolinar of Malkshore." So she reveals everything. I'm like, smart? I don't know.
I don't know.
So Bynar is like, throw them in the pit. I don't know. It's not like that.
Whatever. Look, they're going in a place that's worse than where they are now in
yes.
hell.
Yes, in hell. So we're in the pit. Carter is sure Bynar helped Jolinar escape. And hey, surprise, they found Jacob. What a coincidence.
He's in the exact same cell in the pit.
Yes.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. How convenient.
What are the odds?
Yeah. So I think Matruf takes care of him a little bit, gives him something, and he's like, yeah, Jack is like, is he going to make it? And Matruf says, not here. Unless we get him out of space, he will die. Yeah, of course. Everybody dies in hell. No, aren't right. they not well, dying in hell? I thought it was in, was forever. But okay.
Well, yeah, but they needed to do something to amp up the urgency in the episode. Oh, yeah.
We see something very important because Teal'c sees a beam going from the moon to the planet.
Right. And as soon as I see that, I'm like, oh, okay. So now we know how they're going to escape.
Yes. So we're on the planet and we see Sokar. He's fondling a candle. He likes it.
You know, maybe Sokar and Martuk could get together
Ooh.
Because Martuk already has the personal massager. Uh-huh. And with the fondling a massager, I mean...
We're
going to showtime this episode.
That's a fun time.
That's a fun time.
So, Sokar says to Bynar, I think Bynar said something about, oh, thank you for sending them to me and all of that. And he's like, I did not send her to you. They are intruders. Find out what they want, then kill them. And then he says to some other guard, a ship brought those intruders, find it and destroy it.
Okay, so here's where they got me.
Okay.
Straight up.
Okay.
So the other person that Sokar turns to and says, a ship brought him, find it, destroy it.
Yeah.
It's this guy that's in a red robe and he's got the little Sokar symbol on his forehead. Mm-hmm. But they hold the camera on him just a little bit longer. He does this kind of look on his face like the I've got a secret that you don't know kind of thing. And I took it hook, line, and sinker. This is the inside guy that's secretly working with the Tok'ra still. And he's going to help them escape.
Possible. I mean, his name is Jumar, just that you know. So that's Jumar. played by, let me look that up, played by, where is him? Where is he? Jumar. I'm blind. Eli Gabay. Actor, voice actor in Black Lagoon and Beyblade, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So, just saying. Yeah, so that's Jumar.
So that's the whole tapestry I wove out of mm-hmm. that.
Yes, you did.
And it's I was hooked on that all the way to the end of the episode. And then mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I just got played.
I think so. Yes. So we go to the pit, and this time it is a exposition pit.
They have lots of exposition places.
Yeah, every place has to have an exposition place. So I guess the pit is theirs. Jacob reveals that. So Carr's fleet is actually 10 times larger than what they thought originally. And he's poised to attack 6 key system lords. He will win. The attack was due to take place 2 weeks from the time I was captured. That was 4 days ago. I was like, that's pretty quick. He gets captured. And Martouf goes to SGC and they go to the planet. And all of that happened within 4 days.
That is pretty fast.
That was fast.
Also, we skipped over a thing that at least I think we did, that to me was mm-hmm. total Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
Because Martouf had a healing potion with him.
That was earlier. I mentioned that earlier. So, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, see, I was already hooked. My brain was already like 3 steps ahead.
Yeah.
About the guy in the red robe that totally... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The healing potion happened earlier when we got the reveal that he has to... Like, they have to get Jacob out of this place.
That's right. I remember now.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes I'm slow.
Yeah, in this case. But it's very similar scenes, very similar setup. Not a lot of changes in between, so...
Yeah.
Understandable. But
I was waiting for them to tell me how many hit points that Jolinar has.
Yeah, more now. No, not Jolinar. You mean Jacob.
Jacob.
Yes. So they take out their communication device, kind of, I don't know, it looks like. What does it look like?
A computer mouse.
Maybe, yeah. So they talk to Teal'c, but before they can relay the all-important information that Teal'c should send off to the Tok'ra, Naonek comes in and grabs Carter. And I'm like, they could have just waited until she's gone and just relayed that info. Why don't they? But, you know.
Right?
Plot has to happen that way.
Yeah.
So, we go to the throne room. And that throne room has a number attached on my document because there's something I wanted to mention about this.
Okay.
The scenes in the throne room were... They had a very unique... kind of style. They had this red stained glass lighting, and like it was kind of an infernal mood, kind of a bedroom but also infernal mood mm-hmm. that they wanted to set, and I think they did a really good job doing so.
Yeah, they did. It didn't feel like a bedroom as a place to relax.
Yeah.
That's not how it felt.
But it's also not like a very traditional throne room where it's like feudal and all of that and like pompous and gold everywhere. It's like, no, it's like he has a bedroom as his throne room.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happens there.
I guess it's like Vegas.
It's like Vegas. Maybe, yeah. Little hint. So Naonek takes Carter into the room and then leaves. But he does leave the door ajar so that he can still see in.
Which I thought was really weird.
Until you know what happened.
Until I know what happens. But yeah, the whole thing seemed weird.
Yes. So it is revealed in that room that Sokar took Bynar's eye. Because he let Jolinar escape.
Yeah.
He's so even more ugly than he was before.
Yeah. The joke that I had when that whole mm-hmm. thing played out, my office manager was not plussed at all. No. I turned to my cat and I said, he's not binar anymore. He's unar. He's
unar. Yeah.
And the joke still doesn't work.
No, this joke doesn't work. And like to be clear, we're not making fun of people who only have one eye. We're making fun of, or not even fun, like we're commenting on the way, like, I mean, it's not like, oh, he doesn't have he only has one eye. No, it's like all like cut up and like, pus is oozing out, and it's just like really badly looking.
Yeah.
It was not treated, basically. I don't even want to know what happened to that eye and how it was taken.
You know, it could have been a ribbon device, or it could have been like that really bad Robin Hood movie. Was okay. that in the 90s?
I don't know which one, but there were so many.
The Kevin Costner one.
Mm, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, I know which one. Yes, that one.
Yeah,
yes.
where they talked about, well, I'm going to take your eye out with a spoon because it'll hurt more.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Or the Jaffa knife that they used to kill the gold larva. I don't know. Could also be.
Oh, could be. Yeah.
So anyway, not a happy reunion between, well, Jolinar / Sam and Binar. Let's put it this way. And the next thing we hear, and I really liked how that was done, it was really nicely done. We go down to the pit, and then we hear Sam scream. So that was really nice.
Yeah.
And Jacob hears it, of course. Jacob, of course, has extra info. We get Jacob Wiki because he saw Binar in Sokar's palace. So he somehow has a way to leave. Hint, hint. Maybe that's what we should investigate.
Which kind of makes sense. And we've already been handed on a silver platter the method of escape, or the mechanism. Now we just need to figure out how to get everyone to where they can ring off, because we know at this point that's what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. There must be rings somewhere. Well, and the next scene will reveal how. So Binar basically talks to Sam. He says, our most recent addition is the Toker Selmak, so he already knows who he is. Have you come to rescue him? Did you think I helped Jolinar to escape? And Carter says yes to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Binar says, why? And as Carter says, because you loved her. And Binar says, you're mistaken. Then why do you hate her so much? Yeah, that's kind of a good question, right? Why, love can turn into hate, pretty deep hate. And Binar pretends, but I think he's lying at that point. Her death has robbed me of the revenge that I had, that I've long dreamed of. Wow.
I didn't take that as he's lying. I took it as he just changed the subject.
Maybe a little bit of both. I mean, I don't mean he's lying in a way of he's lying for the sake of lying. I think he's lying to himself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
he's kind of deflecting and saying, you robbed me of like being able to kill her. But I think in reality, he did love her.
I agree.
Yeah. And that is when Carter, I think she sees something on his chest.
He's got like a necklace.
Yeah. And there's like a little crystal in it. And that's when she remembers how she escaped. There were rings, as we thought, and that little crystal on his necklace is basically how you activate it. Or unlock it, or whatever. She tries to escape that way, I think grab the crystal and something. But then Binar... Oh, no, never mind. That happens later. She sees the crystal and remembers. And Bynar is basically at the point where he wants to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Neonek comes in and shoots him.
Which I was not expecting.
No, that was unexpected. I mean, like, I did not think that would happen. I thought they would kind of convince Bynar to help them again and all of that. Because he really loves it. We will never know because he's dead.
Because he's, yeah.
Yeah. And then Neonek doesn't say a word, nothing, just has her taken back to the pits.
Which, yeah, the whole thing is really weird. And so now I'm like, wait a second. So is this the red robe guy and he's in disguise? Or who is this person? Because clearly this now is someone who has an agenda that involves wanting to help SG-1.
Maybe. Maybe not. Not clear.
So it's not clear.
We go back to the pit.
That's true.
To the pit, and Carter like gets brought down there, and she tells the others about the rings and like how to inactivate them and what Neonek did. So the cargo ship has rings, and they kind of think about, hey, could we intercept the ring transport? I think we could. Because they're kind of like mini Stargates. So,
yeah.
Makes sense, right? But, oh no, Teal'c is under attack. I just wrote down, took them long enough. It's like this little moon, and there's like a cargo ship floating. I mean, space is big, but I'm like, they're bad at security.
Yeah, you would think there would be lots of
guards,
monitoring equipment in the area.
Yeah.
So any approaching ships, you would know.
Yeah. And, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. They didn't care. I mean, maybe because nobody wants to go to hell. They don't need it.
Yeah.
But it was like, it took them long enough. So basically, in the pit, they stage an escape. They have the guards come in and they like overwhelm them. And then they go up to the room, to the throne room of formerly Bynar's throne room. Throne room. Wow, words are hard today.
Yeah.
But something isn't like they like. Neonek is still lying down, and that's where they grab the crystal from his necklace and like try to use it, but something isn't working properly. And or I know they have to reprogram the rings because they don't want to go to Sokar, of course. So Matuf has to do it. So the others are kind of blocking the doors and trying to, make sure the other guards don't come in because, of course, they figured out what's going on. And Neonek shows up and he just uses the hand device to just blast open the door. And that's where we get the big reveal. Because the teams, of course, captured again. Just before they could escape. Like, it literally, maybe a second, they would have needed to. Matuf was basically done, and then was like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And Neonek. And that's where we get
the big reveal.
The big reveal. Because he says, you shall call me Neonek no longer. From this day forth, I will reclaim my real name. And he pulls his, he had been wearing this. What did it remind me of, the helmet?
It felt kind of like a medieval helmet.
Yeah, Mighty Ducks, I was thinking about for some
Mighty
reason.
Mighty Ducks, that's funny. But yeah, the whole face of it is. Yeah.
It's like it had kind like of a duck-like
like mesh
face. Mesh and a helmet. And like it was really nicely designed. But he kind of pulls off the helmet. And reveals that it is Peter Williams, a.k.a. Apophis. The right half of his face is kind of covered with like a metal mask of some sort. And he says Apophis. That's the name.
they do a cool effect here.
Yeah.
Because we do get the glowing eye effect.
Yes.
Even on his eye that's closed, you can see the light glowing through the skin.
Yes, it's really nice.
I thought that was a nice effect.
And then we get a dot, dot, dot to be continued.
Yeah. So because I totally fell for the ruse with the guy in the red robe being the person that's going to help them.
Yeah.
I missed the things that should have clued me in that Naonak, aka Apophis, was going to be the person that they actually end up having to partner with to escape.
I mean, we don't know yet. He has captured them. Is he going to help them escape? I mean, they were like mortal enemies. Like they destroyed his entire empire. I'm not sure he's so...
Well, he also went to them for help.
Okay, and they let him die. That's true.
And then they, yeah.
Yeah. I'm still, he's a Goa'uld. I would not trust him for like half a second.
I would not trust him either. However, I have predictions for you.
Okay, we'll talk about that after. Let's talk about, like, what did you, like, I mean, okay, we have the big reveal, which was really well done, I have to say. I mean, we had some idea that Apophis may be alive, because in the Sokar episode, of course, we know that that Sokar especially likes to, like, torture and revive his... prisoners?
Yeah, they told us straight up that Apophis is going to be revived in the sarcophagus so that he could be tortured.
Maybe. I mean, they were not sure, but they were not sure if that's possible given how far gone Apophis was. But they said it's possible. But they also, like, in previous episodes, it was like, for the most part, they were sure Apophis was dead. I mean, they told everybody that Apophis is dead. They should remember in wasn't even last episode? No, the one before where they were on the planet with the military camp, like they showed it and everything. So I think they were thinking, I would say, they didn't heard anything. They were like, okay, very likely he's dead. Like they would have heard something, I guess. So this is a big reveal that he's still alive.
It is a big reveal.
And I love that. Like how it was kept secret until the last second, basically, or last couple seconds of the episode.
Yeah, that was done really well.
Yeah, and there were no obvious hints before. Like, little things where it's like, okay, he's keeping the door a little bit ajar, and like, little things where it's like, okay, he's going to play a role somehow, but not that he's a Apophis.
Yeah, it wasn't obvious, I don't think, even in retrospect, that was Apophis.
Yeah. So, what did you think about this one?
I thought this was a much better episode than we've had for a little while now. And I did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm hoping in the next episode we get more Teal'c.
We'll talk about that, what your predictions are. Like I want to keep that like that surprise to the end, like your predictions, and then we'll see how wrong they were. So let's stick to this one at least. Like,
okay. So
better than the others. That's what you said. Is that a good thing? A bad thing? I don't know. Like, okay, better is better. Yes, but like, how much? Is it a good episode or is it just better?
Well, I mean, it's a good episode, and it's better than what we've been getting.
Okay.
And I thought they did a great job with sets.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I liked that they were willing to approach the very sensitive subject of what Jolinar had to do while she was imprisoned there.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I liked that, they ham-fisted us a couple things, like, hey, this is the thing they're going to use to escape, okay?
Hey, there's a big attack coming, so we should probably know about that.
Right. Right. But at the same time, excuse me, they didn't make it obvious what the big reveal was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And after so many episodes where things have been like spoon-fed, ham-fisted to us, to get a reveal like this, where we, I mean, if there's something in in this episode that should make it obvious that's Apophis before the reveal. I'd mm-hmm. love to know what it is because I completely missed it.
Okay. Yeah.
And I like the cliffhanger. And it's not a cliffhanger like, oh my gosh, are they going to escape? It's, holy crap, it's Apophis. How do they end up having to deal with all of this and escape?
Yeah, I mean, it's still not clear how they're going to escape. I mean, they thought they have a way out, but now they've been captured by Apophis, so.
Right, and that plays into my predictions, which I will hold for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's do chevrons then.
I'm actually torn on this one between a 6 and a 7 because I really liked it, but was it that much better?
Okay. What would push you over the hump to a 7? Like, where you think? I mean, we've been critical of episodes so far.
So. We have been critical of episodes. Okay, here's the thing. This episode is a 6 for me, all the way up until we get the Apophis reveal. Mm-hmm. And then I'm so pleased with the way they played that, where when his mask comes off, I'm genuinely surprised.
Good. Yeah. For that reason, it has to be a 7, right?
Well, yeah, but at the same time, the rest of it is just a 6 straight up, which is still really good.
But I mean, think about it this way. You got most of it. You remembered most of it correctly, in the correct order. I think only once you got confused. So overall, it was a memorable episode for you because you didn't get confused.
It was. I was not confused in this. Yeah, you're right. You've talked me into it.
Okay.
I give this one a 7.
This time I'm talking you into it. Because, like, usually I'm like, yeah, I agree. Like, you're right.
But, you know, I'm okay with you talking me into the 7. I don't feel like I've been manipulated into giving it a higher rating than it deserves.
Okay. I had to use the no-sayer trimmer on you to... to get you to do no.
Whoa, did it just get hot in here?
Yeah, anyway, I think not a surprise. I'm also giving it a 7. I'm like, it's for me, it's an interesting episode because on one hand, I know what happens. I know what happens in the second part. I know what happens after. I know the significance of it in the overall, let's say, the overall storyline. And sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's a bad thing. And oftentimes I try to not have that influence too much, whether I like the episode or not, but you can never go to 0. Like, there's always some influence of it because it kind of like colors what you think about certain things.
Sure.
So I'm not going to like reveal anything, but I'm like, the fact that Apophis is back, for me, I really like.
I didn't think I would like seeing Apophis come back. I hadn't really thought about it that much.
Yeah.
But actually having him come back in this way, I like this.
Yeah. And I like Apophis's, and I've never thought about it. I mean, it's rare that you say, oh, it's good that the bad guy's back, right? And he's been a bad guy, but he went from a badly written and badly played bad guy to actually an interesting bad guy. So I think that's where I see it now. Like, I mean, he fell pretty far from being a god and being this like hyper confident, I'm basically you're all peons and I'm going to kill everybody and like I'm going to destroy Earth, all of that. He died, he was tortured, he came back, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what's going to happen with him. But I think the position he has hidden and him he has right now and this reveal and this proclamation of I'm not using the name that I'm assuming Sokar gave him, either he used it as a cover, but I think more likely, so Carr basically was like, okay, you're not Apophis anymore, you're now an Aeonek, and you're going to be the first prime of this Bynar guy. Which is a massive demotion.
And humiliation. It would be less humiliating for him to have been like thrown into the pit.
Yeah.
Tortured, thrown back in the pit.
Yeah, because that means he has value and he's being tortured. But this is kind of like, this is the ultimate torture for him. Being nothing.
The humiliation is just, that is a torture.
Yeah, for sure. So, but like he is confident that he steps out of that and says, I am Apophis. He killed the current leader, Gorgold, of hell and took his place.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we know that there's a bigger picture that's still happening. So for that reason, like for me, it's a 7. Just that part. And it was an enjoyable episode, like plenty of fun and good sets and good lighting and all of that. And I'm looking forward to the second part.
So am I.
So let's talk about your predictions for the second part.
Okay.
I'll try to keep notes.
Okay, so I think that Apophis, when he saw SG-1 arrive, he saw this as an opportunity he could exploit to gain his own freedom. And so his plan now is to use SG-1 as part of his escape plan. And SG-1 is going to try and use Apophis as part of their escape plan. And it's going to be a very uneasy alliance, and SG-1 knows they can't trust him at all, and yet they're in a position where they have to trust him, and so that will get them off of the Hell Planet to where Sokar is, and then. Oh, wait, I forgot. We still have Teal'c. See, here's the problem. Teal'c basically isn't even in this episode.
No, he gets to sit on a set and pretend he's flying a ship, as you said.
Right, yeah. He has like, what, 2-3 lines in the whole episode?
Some wiki lines, yes.
Yeah, so he's going to do the thing where he intercepts the rings.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they will all have to work together, because now they have to defeat Sokar and stop him from taking over all of the different factions. And in the end, Apophis gets to go free, and it's an uneasy temporary alliance to get through defeating Sokar, I think that's where it'll end. So Sokar will be defeated in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm ready to all of that though.
Yeah, so Apophis is back in power, and SG-1 gets to leave. Either he lets him go, or they split off and get away before he can do anything. But one way or another, Apophis is left to do as he pleases. And that means we get more Apophis battles in the future.
Yeah, I've written all of that down, all that stream of consciousness and predictions you made. Like, interesting, we'll see how much of that happens in the next episode, which has a good title. It's The Devil You Know.
Oh, well, there you go. Do they want to work with the devil they know, or the devil that's new to them?
Yeah.
Apophis versus Sokar.
I'm not going to tell you what the German one is, because again, spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, mild spoilers in this case, but spoilers.
Yeah, I don't want the spoilers.
No. I like the French. Les Flammes de l'Enfer. Flames of Hell.
Oh, okay. That's a good one.
Yeah, I'm not going to read the Spanish one. It's really
long. And that's, yeah, the French one is not spoilery.
No, that's why I mentioned it. Otherwise, I would have not told you what it is. Yeah, anyway, we'll have to watch the next episode and then talk about that. And it's going to be a surprise what happens. I can tell you. Let me see who directed it. It was Peter de Vries, of course, because...
because they were having to film two together.
Yeah, exactly. So he continued. But it's a different writing credit. So that tells you something.
So, okay. So the writing credit is for whoever had to flesh out the story.
Yes. Robert C. Cooper did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've heard of him.
As I said, you've heard of him. Yeah. He's had some episodes here or there. Yeah. So that's going to be the next episode. So, Jeff, I would say we end this here. Tell the people where they can talk to us and where they can find more about you. And then, I don't know, go back to the pits.
Go back to the pits. Yeah. All right. So, people can find me on social media as Jay Gamet. Mostly right now on Blue Sky and Mastodon and PixelFed. And then I'll pick a couple shows like I always do instead of all of them. Mm-hmm. The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin.
Important one.
And In Touch with iOS, Dave Ginsberg show.
Both good shows. Yeah, you can
find... I have fun with both of them.
Yeah, they're good, they're fun shows. You can reach out to us on social media at RetroRewatch at techar.social on Mastodon. Also at RetroRewatch.com on Blue Sky. And the good old, ye old email, if you want to send us a written letter in electronic form, I don't know, you can send us a message on email to hello@RetroRewatch.com. And yeah, you can also find me with you together on the British Tech Network on a bunch of shows. And... yeah, thepatrice.com, my website, where you can find out everything I'm doing, the social media links, the podcast projects, everything.
Awesome.
Yeah, and with that, to the pits we go. See you soon.